You are listening to the Punk News Podcast, episode 246. Welcome to the Punk News Podcast. My name is Adam White, recording for you in my new basement in Niagara Falls, Ontario, which is entirely different than the old basement. That's not really exciting to any of you, but it's exciting to me. So anyways, joining me on tonight's show, we have Mr. John Gentile out of Philadelphia, PA.
Back again, baby. Still repping those Morrissey colors, let me tell you.
John, I wasn't on the show last week because the new house didn't have any internet and we sort of need that. How'd it go? Was everything okay? Did you keep it together?
It was good. We played The Price is Wrong about new Record Store Day releases, which was fun. And we had a special guest, Todd from Baldy Long Hair Records. And we just talked about Green Day like we do every week. And it was a chill podcast. And I think this week's going to be a chill podcast as well.
John, tell us about our special guest for tonight.
We are here with a recurring special guest, one of my favorite guests. We are here with Scotty Heath of Tank Crimes Records. Scotty, what's happening? What's happening?
Hello, Punk News. What is up? Glad to be back.
So in case you guys don't know, Scotty Heath runs one of my favorite labels out there in Oakland. It's Tank Crimes Records. They put out a lot of punk, a lot of metal, and a lot of metal that crosses into the punk audience, and a lot of punk that crosses into the metal audience. They put out the record by Kicker that I still haven't shut up about after 3 or 4 years. They put out Ghoul, which is kind of the Tank Crimes house band. It's a bunch of cannibals from Creepsylvania that eat humans and play heavy metal. And right now, I think they might have a second house band. Scotty, Connoisseur, is that one of your newest house bands over there at Tank Crimes Records?
Yes, Connoisseur is a band that is officially hand-shook to the label. I'm putting all my energy into them right now. They're going to do a 47-date U.S. tour off their debut album next month. So it's been cool because, you know, a lot of bands that people consider Tank Crimes bands, they're not. A lot of my friends' bands that I've done splits or EPs with are actually signed to much larger labels with bigger staff and distribution and everything. But I think that makes me really stoked when, like, fans tag me in the photos and stuff of some of those other bands. But Ghoul, of course, is my flagship band, and their entire catalog is with Tank Crimes and now Connoisseur. So I'm really excited because I've been able to see for the first time that Tank Crimes does maybe can actually help out a band. You know, like, I kind of done this for over a decade now, and it's kind of been jumping from coattail to coattail as my friends' bands get popular. And this, with Connoisseur, it feels like I'm reaching back down, you know, and pulling somebody up halfway or something, you know. So it's really exciting, and, like, people are paying attention. And the band's fucking good, or I wouldn't be working with them, so.
And actually, we should give a shout out to the bands on Tank Crimes. He's got Municipal Waste. He's got Iron Reagan. He's got a couple of Nightbird releases. Who am I forgetting over at Tank Crimes Records?
We got Cannabis Corpse, Brain Oil. It's a big one. Iron Reagan actually just FaceTimed me from Belgium. They start their Europe tour tomorrow.
So they have a lot of highly energetic, a lot of bombastic, charging metal acts. But Scotty, who is this Connoisseur band? Are they doom metal, stoner rock? What's the deal with Connoisseur?
So we're calling it, or they dub themselves, Stoner Violence. But I mean, it's basically power violence. You know, they say their biggest influences are, like, they're self-described, like, if Spaz smoked weed and listened to Earth Crisis. So they're, like, influenced by early metalcore and all of power violence, like fastcore, grind, and sludge. And pretty much that's how the album is, really fast and pretty slow. You know, so it's like fast punk grind, which can go right into like sludge metal and back into grinding a 40-second song.
And I guess Connoisseur is kind of a continuing theme that we see at Tank Crimes. There's Cannabis Corpse who like to toke on the Marowini. There's Connoisseur who like to toke on the magic grass. Scott and actually Tank Crimes has a T-shirt that says Dank Times and replaces part of the logo with a marijuana leaf, I think. Scotty, what's your relationship with the weed, with the 420?
I'm a big weed guy. I've always been a big weed guy. I started smoking weed all the time when I was a teenager. And I just always did. And I like it. And now I live out in, I grew up in a small town in Michigan, but now I live in California where weed's still not legal here, but it sure as shit doesn't seem like it's illegal at all, you know? And so I kind of just live in a weed place. I didn't really plan on having more weed bands because it was like Cannabis Corpse. It was like I get a lot of demos from weed bands because of Cannabis Corpse. And I was kind of always like, well, I already have a weed band, you know, or like I'll get a lot of demos from costume bands. And I'm like, well, we already have Ghoul. I already have a costume band. Or even when I used to get, retro thrash has really died down as far as new bands popping up. But I used to constantly get retro thrash bands. And I was like, guys, without being a dick, I already got a record with Municipal Waste and Toxic Holocaust. Like, you're not going to do much better. Right now playing that style, and I'm not trying to be like overly saturated in any one of those things. I think you nailed it when you just, I'm just doing punk and metal. We started out as a hardcore label, hardcore punk. The people in those bands got good enough at their instruments to start playing metal instead of hardcore, and it kind of just went like that. Some of the guys, the guys in Connoisseur I've known for over a decade. And now we're working together. They're like cool dudes that have been around and stuff, you know. So the weed thing, I think, is just I'm a stony California dude, you know, a grown ass man who smokes pot every day. So
do you fear weed harming your creativity or your output? A lot of people say weed is a motivation killer. Do you agree with that cliche or do you disagree with that cliche?
Well, I think it's completely subjective, just weed in general and people's experiences with it. I'm the opposite. I'm the let's smoke a bowl and do this guy. I'm a cup of coffee in a bowl guy to get my shit done, you know? Like I actually use weed in different ways. And I wouldn't say you mentioned creativity, and I wouldn't say I use pot for creativity at all, though it's fun playing music stoned. It's fun doing everything stoned. But I use it to motivate, and I also use it to relax. So I don't know. Like I said, it's subjective, you know? I could never take away from someone's opinion that they simply don't like being stoned because it can happen, you know? I mean, I believe that.
Why? We don't want to draw this out, I guess, but why is heavy metal or metal so weed-friendly, generally speaking, whereas punk rock has, like, straight edge and stuff? How come heavy metal doesn't seem to have the straight edge concept that punk rock has? What is it about metal that, I guess, is weed-friendly, whereas punk rock can be anti-weed?
I don't know, Black Sabbath? I mean, I think it just metal kind of comes from weed, you know, a lot of it, you know? I mean, even just, like, if you come down from rock in the 70s, you know, or like what went from like, you know, you can follow the timeline that there had to be hippie music before there could be Black Sabbath, you know, like there was in between folk, you know. And so there was people, you know, like it kind of just came along when pot got popular or when pot got mainstream, I guess, with hippies. And then metal was also like party. You know, so it's like you've got Sabbath and stuff, but then you've got like Kiss who aren't saying smoke pot. In fact, I think those guys are straight edge, but they are saying have a good time. And then so even in the 70s, when you're talking about like arena bands playing metal, heavy metal parking lot type stuff, it's kind of like get your fucking joint and your can of Bud and, you know, heavy metalers party, you know.
Actually, one last thing, and then we'll get started on the podcast. I should ask you this. Scotty, what advice do you have for kids that are curious about weed or that are already smoking weed, that have or are about to start smoking or have considered it? What advice do you have for them?
You know, that's really a hard one because, you know, I don't a lot of the kids that I come in encounter with, they're already into the shit, you know, whether they like it or not, you know. So, I don't think I have any advice because that's one of those things that you just kind of figure out as a kid, you know, and anything I could say, you got to just do it yourself or not do it, you know, in your thing. But I think that's one of those things where I got no advice. It's a kid thing where you just figure it out and it's so subjective, you know.
Well, there you have it, people. And if you want to know advice about weed, Scotty Tan Crimes is the guy to go to because he does savor the herb as so many wine connoisseurs savor the grape, if I might say so.
Yeah. Hey, you want to talk pot? I'll talk pot. And at the same time, I'm not I'm pretty ambivalent towards like what strain I'm smoking or what. Like, I don't even pay attention to what. I don't know what kind of pot I have right now, and I know that's very important to some people. You know, it's just something I don't do. Though I did. Since we brought up Black Sabbath and we're about to transition away from the weed talk, I did name a strain of weed that was grown here in Northern California.
You did? Like that's the official name?
Yes, I named a strain, and I even got reports that it made it all the way to the East Coast because people in Richmond smoked my strain. And what I named it, and keep your eye out for it, pot smokers and clubs everywhere. I'm not sure if this person's still growing it or if it was seasonal or what, but Master of Reality Purple. That was the weed I named.
Good name.
Yeah.
Well, if you want to know nothing about weed, you should definitely go talk to Dennis Likeson from Refuse because he's completely straight edge. But anyways, that was my weird seg. Was that a good seg?
That was a good seg.
Although that said, if you were smoking, you might like their video, which is, I don't know, kind of geared that way, I guess. So anyways, this was huge news for a lot of the punk rock community in the past week here. I don't know if it really came out of the blue, but it sort of felt like it came out of the blue. But anyways, Refused has announced a new record, and they have released their first new track in 17 years. The new album is called Freedom. It's going to be released on Epitaph on June 30th of this year. In addition, the band has posted a video for the first song from this album, and the song is called Electra. So, John, let me tell you about this thing here, because there's a whole bunch of details that Refused people are all over. So there's 10 songs on this sucker, Electra being the first track on the record. You can head over to YouTube or go to Punk News and just search for Refused, and you can watch the Electra video, which is a lot of geometric stuff and gyroscopy things happening, and I won't say it because I'm sure it's going to come up, but there is a mid 90s certain form of rock band vibe that I'm getting out of this, but anyways. They've also booked a U.S. club tour that they're going to be using to support this sucker. They're playing dates with Faith No More. So anyways, this is the first Refused song since The Shape of Punk to Come, really. So this is the first, which came out in 1998, if anyone wants to do the math there. This is the first Refused song in a long, long, long time. And it's the first material from Dennis that, I guess, that plays in this style, because as I think a lot of people know, after Refused broke up, he formed the International Noise Conspiracy, which was like a garage rock band. And then he played in a hardcore band that I cannot recall the name of at the moment because I'm not very good at this stuff. He also had a solo project called The Lost Patrol that I guess was more of a straight up rock band. But anyways, though, so this is the first screamy, aggressive Dennis playing with Refused Dennis that I guess anyone's heard in a long time. So that, you know, people I guess were pretty excited, I think even before they heard this, but then they heard this and opinions seem mixed to me. John, what do you think?
Well, you know, I didn't come up with this, but and you mentioned the mid 90s thing. A lot of the commenters were like, this sounds like Tool from the mid-90s. And then someone else said, this sounds like Audioslave. And it really kind of does, honestly. It's got that, you know, almost post-groove metal riff to it. That being said, it's not terrible. It's that I actually think for a comeback song, it's pretty good. It didn't set my world on fire. But it's kind of Refuse just doing what Refuse did on The Shape of Punk to Come. What a lot of people say the importance of The Shape to Punk to Come was that it was a radical new album that no one had ever heard anything like it before. And the cliche is like, see, they combined techno when it was still called techno. They combined techno with punk rock. I never really felt that because it just seemed like there was a few techno interludes between like the sort of screamo-ish or I guess post-hardcore songs. Although, I mean, The Shape of Punk to Come was daring, but it didn't set my world on fire. I didn't think it was the most daring record I'd ever heard, and I didn't think it was that insane. I mean, it's a pretty good record. What I would say is I saw them live, and my position is still kind of the same. It's like, they're an interesting band. They're not the greatest band in the world. And honestly, no matter what, they're kind of facing their former selves in that because people have heralded such this album from 17 years ago or whatever it is, they're never going to eclipse that. And basically, they're doomed to fail from the start, if you will, because how can you possibly make a earth-shattering, mind-blowing record 17 years later unless you're somebody like David Bowie or like Lee Scratch Perry or Brian Eno? You're probably just not going to do it. I'm surprised that a lot of the fans aren't like saying, this sucks. A lot of the fans are saying, wow, this is pretty good. And I agree. It's not a mind-blowing song. I don't think Refuse is the greatest band ever, but it's all right. Maybe it's a little too mid-tempo. Maybe it's got a little bit too much of that Tool vibe to it, you know, which I definitely hear.
The video doesn't help them get away from the Tool vibe.
And not only that, I was thinking about this, speaking of the mid-90s, like when you would go like look at high-end stereos, like I guess the Equalizer would like do all these fancy graphics. Like, that didn't even really mean anything, but it, like, looked cool. This whole video looks to me like the fancy graphics from the Equalizer on a stereo from, like, 1996 or something. So, you know, Refused is back. I think people are just excited to see Refused again, but it's not really going to change all that much. I mean, Scotty, are you a Refused guy? Are you anti-Refused?
No, I'm not. I don't think that they shaped punk in really any form. I just don't get it. And I don't think, like you were saying, like how people thought it was interesting that they were like bringing techno into it. And I agree that they just kind of slapped it on. And there's a huge difference between incorporating two things of music and like slapping some shit on together, you know? Also, but for me, I know the name of Dennis's hardcore band, you guys. It's AC4 because one of my friends from DS13 and Bruce Banner played in that band. But anyway,
there you go. Okay.
AC4. They did an LP on Deranged. So one of the things was I'm glad you said what year it was. I was going to ask you guys what year it came out. So 1998 is the year I moved to California. I was 17 or 18 years old. Or no, I was 20 years old. In 1998, I'd moved to California the year before. I was a huge Epitaph fat guy in the 90s, obviously. I'm into punk. It's the 90s. I'm Epifat, big time. This didn't sound like what I wanted from Epitaph at the time. And I was also, because I'd moved to California, starting to get into new bands and bands that didn't even have records out and stuff like that, and getting into the more underground. So time wise for me, this wouldn't have done anything anyways, but I did give it a chance because this punk record, which to me isn't even that punk, and certainly isn't metal, also got inducted into the Decibel Magazine Hall of Fame and got the front cover. And so I thought, I gave it another chance because I thought there was something that I missed for the reasons I just explained. And no. And I listened to the new song just to be reminded, and I didn't listen to it all the way. But I did think I had a pretty clever tweet about a week or two ago when they announced the touring or something like that, and it was something, some sort of play on the they shaped punk or how they didn't, and it was retweeted by Kirk Hammett.
Ooh!
Which I know is actually his assistant, but still. Got mad love from Kirk Hammett in the last few weeks. Ghoul played his Fear Fest Evil, and it was very fucking cool, to say the least. It was awesome. Kirk Hammett's like my best friend now. He retweets me.
But I think the band is sort of in a weird place with this because, I largely agree with you guys that the Shape of Punk to Come, if you took out all of like the interludes and ambient shit and all the various stuff that they had padded around the songs, it was not all that. To me, it wasn't breaking all that many barriers. It wasn't doing anything that, you know, other bands hadn't been doing. I think maybe other bands hadn't been doing that on Epitaph or with that kind of audience. But if you take all that stuff out, you know, it's maybe a little bit more conventional. But the problem is that while Shape of Punk to Come was a huge record and was massively influential, it was also responsible for inspiring so many horrible bands. Like it just it was one of these records that just gave the screamy mall emo, whatever we're gonna call it, genre that emerged from like Victory Records and everything in the early 2000s. Like all those bands were all over this, and if you would like, you know, if you would have cut the Shape of Punk to Come off the musical family tree, we would all have not had to go through a lot of pain. So I got to imagine that Refuse themselves, especially given Dennis's bands that he formed after Refuse broke up, they probably aren't super stoked with the descendants of that record. So I could imagine when they're going to come back and start making their own stuff, they might not want to not want to tread that same territory. They might want to do something that is maybe a little bit more conventional, maybe a little bit more stuff that's a little bit more like their earlier releases than Shape of Punk, just because I don't know where the road from Shape of Punk brings you.
Like, I've read some comments today that was somebody defending Refused, and it was like, without them, there wouldn't be this. And it was a fucking list of like 12 bands that I didn't give a shit about. And it just reaffirmed to me that I didn't give a shit about Refused.
Well, exactly. So like, so if you have no Refused, you have no what? Like Thursday? Taking Back Sunday, so, right?
None of those bands ever really like did anything for me anyways. Or I just was going in a different direction in those years, the late 90s, way away from that.
Yeah, and I was the exact same way. So there was, so I'm not, and I've got to imagine just that, just because like, so like they break up Refused, and then Dennison goes and forms a garage rock band. So, you know, perhaps being the band lauded by, you know, sad, screamy teenagers is not what these guys wanted.
Well, yeah, and then he started a hardcore band where he got like guys from real underground hardcore bands around Sweden to be in it with him. You know, he didn't like get, which was just an interesting choice, you know, to step away from Refused and do the AC4 album is a huge step. I mean, that to me is a punk record, at least, you know.
Well, let's talk about a band that might be shaping punk, or at least in my opinion, has taken or is taking punk into interesting and daring new directions. Let's talk about Ceremony. As you all probably know by now, they announced the album The L-Shaped Man. It's due out May 19, 2015 via Matador. In case you don't know, Ceremony is a band actually from pretty close to Scotty, about a half hour away, 45 minutes, Ronette Park, California. They had two, I guess what you would call power violence albums before releasing what I think is one of the greatest hardcore albums of all time, the album Ronette Park.
I also it's Ronard Park. It's the T is actually pronounced like a D out here. I don't know if that's just how people pronounce it out here or not. But quick thing, Capitalist Casualties, also from Ronard Park.
There you go. Also out on Tank Crimes Records, Capitalist Casualties.
No, I've actually never worked with Capitalist Casualties, but close friends.
Oh, didn't you like release like one of their albums or something?
The thing is that Votsek, my old band, our bass player owns 6 weeks records with her husband, who is in Capitalist Casualties. Mm. There's a strong Tank Crime 6 weeks connection.
Well, they 6 weeks
is Capitalist Casualties. Yeah.
Well, there you have it. I'll tell you, I didn't even know about Ceremony. I went to 924 Gilman. It happened to be the Ronard Park release show because Paint It Black was paying. And you know, usually when I see a band live, if I like the band, I'm not blown away by them the first time I see them. I'm like, oh, that's something interesting. Maybe I'll check them out when I get home, or maybe I'll pick up a CD or something. The first time I saw Ceremony at the Ronard Park record release, I was blown away. I bought everything they had for sale, all the music they had for sale. It was an amazing, amazing show. Ronard Park is basically Damaged, I say, if Damaged was written in 2010 instead of 1981. I mean, it's not exactly the same as Damaged, but it's that same primal, savage feeling. However, after then, they released the album Zoo, which was kind of a post-punk record, and now they're about to release the L-Shaped Man, which, in my opinion, is the end of that journey where it's entirely a post-punk record. They're calling it a punk record. You can call it what you want. But here's my question. They got a new song out called Your Life in France. It's the third single out. I've dug all the new stuff Ceremony's released. I really like the last three singles. But I wonder if I'm being jaded in this following statement. And Scott, you can reflect on this. I hear the new Ceremony songs, and they sound very, very, very Joy Division-ish or early New Order to me, like almost too much so. Is that just me trying to outsmart myself, saying, oh, I know what Joy Division sounds like, and that's where this comes from? Or does this really bite on Joy Division a little bit too hard? Am I being too mean?
Well, I can't answer that one for you because I don't have a big frame of reference to this new Ceremony stuff because I'm not the biggest fan of those bands you just mentioned.
You like Joy Division?
I appreciate their position in history and in music, but I don't own their records, no.
That's I will give you props for announcing that because most music aficionados will say, "Oh, I love Joy Division." You know,
I'm too old to fake it, dude. I'm too old to fake it at this point. I might have lied about liking Joy Division 10 years ago at a party or something, but yeah, I don't shit.
Well, what'd you think of this new track? What'd you think of the new sound of the band?
Okay, so I'm not into the new song. I'm just not a fan, but like I said, I don't have a reference for it. I loved Zoo. I liked the previous departure from hardcore into, like, I like how they felt that out, but that to me had more of, like, I didn't feel like they were going completely Joy Division at that point. I thought they were going more 90s alternative college rock. I was hearing Superchunk in there and stuff like that. And I was way into it. And just, I found myself defending their last change. Like, to people that weren't into it at all, I was the one being like, nah, dude, this is good. This is good shit. And so watching them go farther than that makes a lot of sense, but they've passed me. They've gone past my interest in slower, moodier music. But I think those guys are great. Anthony from the band has become a good friend of mine in the last few years, just from being around Berkeley and stuff. And they toured with Fucked Up a few years ago when I was driving Fucked Up, and so just kind of got to meet the guys and stuff like that. And so I support where they're going, and shit, you know, it's like people who are acting surprised that they're doing this have to remember that they were touring with AFI and wearing lace gloves on stage like 5-6 years ago. It didn't happen yesterday, you know?
So here's a question. As someone who is a complete Ceremony novice and having listened to this song, it was cool. I was into it, but I'm aware of the history, and I'm aware that this band is on this crazy arc of changing genres and stuff like that. So if I'm approaching them at this point, where do I start? Do I go back to the start and listen to them as a straight up hardcore band and see how they got here? Or do I start with Runard Park or Zoos, or like where do I go?
OG super cult people say, oh, you got to start with the first record. You know, it's the most hardcore. It's the most, and it's true. It's the nastiest. It's the most hardcore. But though the first two albums are very good, but they're not extremely special.
I don't think the band would tell you to start there. I'm just guessing that. I'm just totally guessing that. But I don't think they'd tell you to start at the beginning.
I
pick somewhere in the middle.
I would say they would say start here because they seem to be a very...
Well, this is where they're going, so yeah, they would come on, and they're going to become one of those bands, you know, similar to Fucked Up, who I don't think departed their original sound quite as much, but definitely have friends of the early and friends of the later stuff, you know, who sometimes don't get it. One thing that's cool about I think Ceremony can hold on to their early fans, even if they don't get it. What's going to be interesting is Ceremony shows now, because they can't abandon the old hits. They have to play the new material, and they're definitely still going to incite like fucking moshing and shit. But new song, no one has any business stage diving to at all. you know? So that's going to be an interesting thing. And I know that happens to fucked up sometimes. People don't know they're going to get kicked in the head if they go stand up front, and they kind of find it out and have to like maneuver halfway through the set, you know?
Ah, but may I counter? Now, I'm a huge fucked up fan, and I think actually you're the Dragon out on Tank. People are going to think Scotty's paying us. He's not. I'm just a fan of the label. The Year of the Dragon 12-inch was a great, 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 great record. However, I don't know why I just brought up Year of the Dragon. Anyway, the point is this, is Scotty, is fucked up shows have changed dramatically since 2002,
oh, yeah.
But even 2007. I think Ceremony's on that arc, and you know, there's a lot of OG hardcore punk guys that don't like change at all. And I do think Ceremony's going to lose that audience, but that's not the end of the world. And I think Ceremony might even be ready to lose that audience. I think
they're ready. They're a grown-up band. I mean, they didn't, you know, so they've been a band since like fucking 2002 or something like that. It's these guys have gone from boys to men. Literally, you know, I'm sure
boys to men.
Yeah, like really, you know, I mean, they were children when they started this band. Maybe they were 21, 22 years old, but now they're grown men, you know, and this has become their career, which no one ever saw that coming when they were a hardcore band playing Gilman Street.
Query, will Ceremony be the Tantalus type band that is Wire and that some people like myself will always want to hear stuff from the first three records, and the band will distance themselves from those records and always play the cooler, newer, more adult stuff? And when I say cooler, I mean colder, not hipper.
Yeah, at this point they can't abandon the old stuff, but we'll see. We'll see where they go from here, you know? I mean, the album isn't even out yet, you know, and they're about to do a big tour. One of the things that's cool, it's like there's a lot of things going. Like, I know they're taking Tony Molina out on tour, and that's like a hardcore kid who now does like poppy indie rock stuff. I think they did a tour with that band Nothing, which I think is great, but they're like shoegaze, but it's like old hardcore guys. It's like the music has come along far enough that there's a market for hardcore adults to listen to more indie rock and shoegaze stuff like that and still be okay with, I don't know, like a hardcore band on the bill, or there's just a lot of things moving that way that maybe wouldn't have been predictable that it would be a success 7 years ago.
Well, there you have it. Scotty, let's take a break for a tune. Let's dig something out of the Tank Crimes discography. What should we play from Tank Crimes?
Oh, we got to do a Connoisseur track, man. I'm giving them all my love right now, man. We'll do something from the back catalog later if you give me another chance for a song.
Sure.
But you know what? This one is, we just did a lyric. I did my first lyric video, which is fun for Connoisseur because the songs are about weed. But this song's called Orc Summer. I mean, it's going to be the hit of the summer.
Yeah!
And that was Orc Summer by Connoisseur, out now on Tank Rhymes Records.
Out June 9th.
Oh, out June 9th on Tank Rhymes Records.
Pre-orders are up, and the CDs are already in. The vinyl looks like it's on time. Pre-orders should ship before the release date. The band's tour starts a week earlier. They'll have them with them. And of course, all the shit will be up on YouTube and Spotify and Bandcamp and everywhere. We'll probably try to get all that stuff up the day the tour starts. So,
and let's talk about a band that's near and dear to my heart, Gwar. Gwar is going on their 30th anniversary tour. As I'm sure you all know, or most of you know, Gwar's lead singer, founder or co-founder, and certainly one of their driving forces, Dave Brocky, died last year quite tragically, quite suddenly, from a heroin overdose. The band continued without him, bringing in two new front singers, actually. And now they're going on their 30th anniversary tour. On the last tour, they paid tribute to Dave Brocky, who was Odorous Urungus. I will definitely be going to this. I gotta say, I saw Gwar on the post-Dave Brocky tour, the first one, and I want to give the band all benefit of doubt that I can, and I am. I mean, they lost the main guy. They lost the singer. And so, you know, when you used to go see Gwar, it was amazing with Dave Brocky or Odorous Urungus. Like, it was song after song after song. Odorous is barking in his wonderful, you know, unique growl, shout voice, which was so unique sounding. He was making all these quick jokes because he was super quick with it, and the music was extremely intense. You know, it was song after song after song. I saw them last time. They were a little looser. They weren't as tight. It wasn't as extreme. And what was, I don't want to say weird, but now kind of each member of Gwar sings at least one song. So like, it's like, now it's this guy's song. Now it's that guy's song. I certainly enjoyed the show. It wasn't as fierce as it was with Odorous Urungus, but you can't really fault the band for that, because at that time, and even now, they were certainly in recovery mode, healing their wounds. So I'm excited to see this. I'm excited to see how they change, and I'm really excited to see what they do on their 30th anniversary. Scotty or Adam, do you guys think that Gwar can achieve what, or rise to the position that it was 2 or 3 years ago? Can they maintain it?
Adam, you want to go for it? Because I have so much shit to say about Gwar, I might never stop talking. So you might want to.
Oh, well, okay. I don't have a ton, so I'm going to. I mean, John, you are a resident Gwar expert. So you've seen them now with Voltron doing.
Well, Voltron and Blowthor, they have two singers now, yeah.
Right. So when you're seeing them, then, are they carrying the show in the same way that.
No, it's a little bit more cartoonish, a little bit. And I don't mean that in a bad way. It's a little bit more comic book. And it's ridiculous for me to say that Gwar is more comic bushes or more sillier. But one of the inherent, I think, geniuses of Gwar is that they're very silly, but they don't acknowledge it. They act as though they're these horrible monsters. And they're just funny in of themselves. Now it's kind of seems like they're straining a little bit more for jokes and a little bit more to be a little funnier or zanier, which I don't think they need to do. Gwar in of itself is humorous. They don't need to try to be funny. You know, and I think the band is learning that. I hope that.
Yeah, I didn't get a chance to see. I missed them when they came. I haven't seen them with Volvatron and Blothar yet. I spent 9.5 weeks on tour with Gwar in 2006, and it changed my life. It changed the way I approach the bands I was playing in the time. It changed the entire, all my goals for Tank Crimes changed after spending time with Gwar. And, like, I learned so much about working hard and having integrity. Like, there's a lot of stuff. I think I was, like, too cool for school, or, like, I was still, like, super punk and young when I went out with Gwar. And I started realizing that there wasn't much difference between somebody I would maybe call a rock star in a derogatory way when I was a little shit and what actually turned out to be people that I had enormous respect for all their hard work. It's going to be, obviously, it's really hard to go on with Dave Brocky. I mean, like you even said, just the stuff on stage, a lot of the wit came right out of his brain, you know? So that's going to be hard. It's weird right now that they're doing a 30. I mean, they can't change time. It's been 30 years. but having to do such a huge anniversary style tour this soon when we're not even used to having Odorous gone yet, you know? But the fans are going to have to get with it. I mean, there's no doubt in my mind, and I think most fans realize this, that Dave wanted Gwar to go on. Like, nothing that they're doing is anything he wouldn't have wanted if there's some sort of afterlife where he could see what's going on, you know? But at the same time, yeah, that's really hard, you know? And then I think it was a cool effort adding two people. Gwar is good with a female presence up there. It had been a while. That's kind of cool too. I'm excited to see all that stuff. But yeah, people are still really sensitive. And I know just because I follow the industry that ticket sales were really low last tour.
That's a shame, honestly. That's a shame.
Yeah, and you'd think more people would come out to support because it would. That's the other thing, though. Or 2 years before, every dang show sold out because it was the flattest tribute tour. And it was something about Brocky ringleading the fans into grieving and celebrating our lost friend, fan, guitar guy. He helped everybody grieve, you know? But he wasn't here to help us grieve. And there wasn't a new front person to do it and, like, tell us it was okay or whatever, you know? So it's hard. And then the only thing that's weird about them announcing this 30-year world tour is that it's only a handful of dates and everyone, like, pretty much Gwar usually does, like, you know, they usually do like 70 dates in the fall. And this tour is like, it's not even a full month long. So hopefully there's more dates coming or something like that. It comes nowhere near the West Coast and it's being billed as a 30-year world tour. So hopefully we've just seen the East Coast or whatever they're doing. But it's the shortest Gwar tour, it's hard to say, that they've announced in years.
Well, we'll move on from Gwar to there's no good segue about this. We're going to talk about Tidal because we have to, I guess, because it's something that's happening.
Listening's on Tidal, hurry up and listen to all the Tank Crime stuff before they close down so we can get a check from them. My entire catalog's up there. They're not going to be open for business very long. Go check it out.
Well, see, then you can answer some good questions about this. So let's just go through Tidal's kind of shitty few weeks that they've had here. So we don't really need to reiterate the when this music streaming service was announced, where it was a giant surreal clown show in which all of these incredibly wealthy super celebrities got together so that they could sign a declaration to something or other, to sign some sort of bullshit Magna Carta that says that you should pay more for your music because, I don't know, Jay-Z needs more money. And they have then launched this service that really went over incredibly flat with the public. And they've been on the defensive because people on the internet didn't really like being pandered to like that. So there's been all sorts of stuff. Of the Tidal woes of the past few weeks, the app dropped out of the Apple's top list of apps. So it is no longer in the top 750 apps or what. I don't know why that's the number, but that's in Apple's App Store. If you look just at the music category, it's floating around at about number 45, which is 7 spots below even like RDO is. They lost their CEO and laid off a bunch of people and had to find a new CEO. There was a bunch of rumors going around today, actually, that the service had raised its subscription prices, but that's not really the case. The case is just that they decided they didn't want to pay Apple's 30% fee for selling stuff out of the App Store. So if you go to buy a Tidal subscription in the Tidal app, it costs 30% more, but you could go on their website and buy it for less. That's kind of weird that they did that, but they did. Then there was the stuff that the founders of Tidal have started to do I don't want to say in desperation, but maybe in some sort of desperation. So there was news that both Jay-Z and Jack White had just started cold calling Tidal subscribers. So I guess if you had signed up, they were sitting there looking at the list of people that use the service and calling you. I don't exactly know what they're doing. Thanking you, I guess, or what? Like, I don't really know.
I'll sign up for it if Jigga will call.
Like,
flat out.
One of the complaints that I heard from people is that, and this is the funny thing, that I think a lot of like computer people were looking at this and saying like, well, yeah, of course that was going to happen. So Tidal streaming like lossless music, so it's streaming CD quality, you know, not compressed music, which is much bigger than compressed music. Like, stuff is compressed for a reason, and it's that it makes it small. So people are trying to listen to their Tidal music on their mobile device or whatever like that, and they're either blowing data caps or they're finding it's incredibly slow and has to buffer a lot. Well, of course, it's a bigger thing. So if you're having all these technical issues with Tidal, which aren't really technical issues, again, it's issues that are supposed to be there because they're not compressing anything, and Jay-Z calls you up, like, does he do tech support? Like, can he help you with the fact that your, you know, iPhone 4S won't stream the, I don't know, Sun Ra album you're trying to listen to properly? Like, I'm gonna go ahead and
say he's not doing that.
Yeah, I would figure, right? So then to top all this off, then Jay-Z hopped onto Twitter and put out a series of hashtag Tidal facts, where he defended the service and tried to debunk some of the negative stuff that was said about it. And the problem with this is that not a lot of what he said was actually true when people looked into it. There's a really great article. It's in Time magazine called We Fact Checked All of Jay-Z's Tidal Facts. And it turns out that not a lot of it really makes a lot of sense. So he went in and he said that, you know, they're doing just fine. They have 770,000 subscribers, but that may be true, but they didn't get 770,000 subscribers because of Tidal. Remember, this was a service from, was it from Norway or Sweden or something like that?
It already existed. My catalog was already on there on the service before Jay-Z bought it.
So he bought it, and it had 500,000 subscribers at that point anyways, at least.
It seems kind of like those numbers are like, remember when like they were really pushing for those big numbers on Obamacare? And they kept just like inflating it by a couple hundred thousand all the time. Like, that's kind of what Tidal's doing. Like,
yeah, exactly. So he also went and he said that there are many big companies out there that are spending millions on a smear campaign. And that was maybe the one most tinfoil hat crazy thing that he said. I mean, so, some of his numbers are kind of iffy. But the fact that he's claiming that there's a like orchestrated multi-million dollar smear campaign against Tidal, I don't know about that one.
Yeah, it was called Twitter 5 seconds after they announced it. Like, that was the smear campaign was just they did everything so dumb and no one liked it. No one got it. And they actually ended up promoting Spotify so much. I think I read that same thing about them falling way down off on the app list or whatever. Like, Spotify's been going way up because they kept being like, they just kept reminding people that Spotify was half the price of what they were doing. And they kept saying Spotify, Spotify. And then they got all this press because it was all the celebrities, but none of the press didn't mention Spotify. Like, Spotify's got to be so stoked. They gave them so much press and so much everything, you know? And, yeah, I mean, I think it was dumb off the thing. The smartest thing that Jay-Z did was get all those other celebrities, and it was also the stupidest thing he did because they didn't all buy the company. He bought it, and he gave each of those people 3% of the company just to be a face of it, which was a really smart business thing. I get that. But then the approach that they took, that they needed more money from streaming. And we know these are like fucking Illuminati style one percenters. No one's feeling that at all. And then the idea of like, you can stream music videos. Fucking hello, dude, YouTube. Or even like the exclusive track from Rihanna was on YouTube, like it immediately after it was streamed the first time on on title. Like, just some of the stuff they think they could do, it really shows that they're really out of touch with the teenagers that listen to their music, you know?
I mean, the one thing that seems really out of touch to me is that they've been trying to tout this as being an all-in-one, more immersive experience, where you don't just get to stream music, you can also, you know, watch exclusive videos and buy concert tickets and get, I don't know, whatever other trinkets and baubles they're going to give you about the music that you're doing. But, like, that's not the way people operate. It's like, people don't just, like, go into one thing, one piece of software, one website, one whatever, and try to consume all of their stuff in there. Like, that kind of, like, weird vertical integration thing is totally not how people use the internet. Like, people open 50 tabs and do 75 things in those 50 tabs, and, you know, it's not that, like, I don't think anyone's clamoring for there being, like, an all-in-one solution to their music, you know, consumption needs. So it's sort of like it's a product, but I don't know exactly who's there for. But what I want to ask you, Scotty, because you actually, you know, as a producer of product that is on this and other services, can maybe speak to this. They've made a lot. Now, I don't want to give anyone any illusion that, you know, anyone is making any money off of these streaming services. And I got to imagine that Tank Crime certainly really isn't making any money off of these streaming services. But is the deal so much better with Tidal, like they've been saying, like compared to having the music on, like, Spotify or RDO or something?
I haven't seen a statement yet, so I don't know what the payout is. I was hoping something would come in for March. I'm not sure exactly when it linked. I think I should have a statement for April from Tidal to see how it is. So I can't really speak on the payout. I mean, my entire catalog's up there. We do pretty well. I mean, I'm watching our Spotify checks grow every single month as I watch our iTunes checks go down. Streaming really is going to kill purchasing digital downloads, I think. It's not going to happen overnight, but it's happening. Every month I watch our iTunes money get a little bit smaller and our Spotify money get a little bit more. So I can't answer that about the actual payout, but the thing that struck me is major label artists don't get paid from Spotify. They get paid by advances from their record label based on projected sales and stuff like that. I would imagine that Rihanna, that, like, Universal gives her, like, a few million dollars, and then they just take all her Spotify money. I don't think she would even get a statement that says you made an amount of money. But one thing I will say is that I think when like Lady Gaga says she got paid $5 for 10 million plays, that's her shitty record deal. That has nothing to do with Spotify, because if Ghoul got 10 million plays, we would be fucking stoked on that check. I know it, you know? So that's the thing. It's like these artists that are complaining about their payout, and a lot of it is just because the music industry changes so fast. I mean, there was major label artists that were on lifetime contracts before iTunes even came out, and that was this huge confusion of how do we see revenue from that. This one's a little more dicey because, you know, we can argue about what the payout is worth or if music's worth anything to consumers. Spotify's not writing a check to Rihanna. That's just not how it works. And so, like, the idea of Tidal, like, Jay-Z owns Tidal, but he doesn't own his music. So Tidal's going to give a bigger payout to Warner Brothers, who then still isn't going to give a bigger payout to Jay-Z. They're only going to give him what they already were going to give him, or what he probably owes them back from a giant advance. So that's what else is just kind of confusing, and they don't explain that, and the general public doesn't know how these people get paid, or does it even matter? But that's what I got on it. So
one of the things that I think this underscores, and maybe this is not the main point, but this is certainly a salient point of the conversation, and I just use the word salient. I hope you guys like that, is that the fact is the average consumer has shown time and time again that the average consumer does not care about sound quality. Neil Young failed at giving better sound quality. FLAC files from Bandcamp, people don't care about. WAV files, people don't care about. All people want is MP3s. So here's the question, and I think, well, both Adam and Scotty would be in a position to answer this. Is premium sound quality or good sound quality, will that devolve into a state where only premium sound quality or good sound quality is will be a price paid for an extreme premium by the wealthiest consumers and a small, small, small subset of all music consumers? Is that what's going to happen? And the reason I say that is I think that is what's going to happen. That's my hypothesis, because there's several bands now I know that don't put out that many records. They sell most of the music through iTunes and stuff. But if you want to get a record, you got to spend $35, $40, $50 if you want a record. So is that what's going to happen, that better sound quality or even physical product will become an extreme premium exclusively for wealthy purchasers?
Well, that's always been the case.
What do you mean? CDs are like $10.
No, but no one, people listen to CDs because they were convenient.
That's not true. A lot of people listen to CDs because they have better sound quality than some records.
Yeah, no, they also had better sound quality. But if a CD simply had better sound quality than say like a tape, but was just as inconvenient as a tape,
then people would not buy it. True.
I don't think people would necessarily buy it. People. I remember like when CDs first came out, everyone was making a big deal about the fact that you could skip tracks. Like that was the killer feature of this, was that you could just like hop around to whatever song you want, right? No, but if you think about it, like audiophile quality stuff has always been something that people pay a premium for. You know, 10, 20, 30, 40 years ago, there were still people spending enormous amounts of money on crazy wacky audiophile hi-fi systems that, you know, could suck the very nuance, you know, out of something that you couldn't possibly hear on your horrible FM radio, but, you know, people were going to pay for it. So, like, people willing to pay for that, I think, has always been there.
Well, then let me rephrase then. Now the standard, I guess, sound quality is MP3s, because most consumers get their music through iTunes or streaming. So will the price of the sound quality from 10 years ago rise? That is our sound quality lowering? And the current sound quality, I mean, is the expense of good sound quality going up? That's the question. Yes. Aha. Aha. See, that's exactly it. You see, when Quadrophonic came out, it was supposed to be a better sound quality and it was more expensive. You know, when SACDs came out, Super Audio CDs, they were more expensive. They were supposed to be a better sound quality. But now, there's not a better sound quality. The standard sound quality now is an MP3, and the former standard sound quality, wave files or CDs or whatever you want to call it, is going up, or records is going up.
I think that we're, I mean, and I'll let Scotty jump in here because I don't want to monopolize this, but like I feel that like the whole industry from the producing end of it to the consumer has been so fucked up on this issue for such a while that it's not like we're coming from having something good to choosing a worse option. It's just like we're just varying levels of screwed up on it. Because even when there was no digital music involved and we were just talking about CDs, we were still talking about CDs where everything was compressed in an incredibly loud way, where if you look at the wave files of any of this music, it was, you know, it was just a wall where there was no peaks and valleys and no actual dynamics in the audio or anything like that. And everyone was complaining for a long time from the earlier generation pre-CD about how, well, everything is being mixed on this incredibly loud, horrible way on CDs now, and everything sounds like shit. So, you know, how far back do we have to go before we can all agree that, like, you know what? Okay, at this point, we had good sounding music that human beings were actually buying for a decent price. Like, that didn't all go to shit in the last 2 or 3 years when iTunes came out.
Like, it did, though. MP3 sound like shit. That's where it went to shit.
MP3 sound like shit, but a lot of CDs produced in the 90s sound like complete shit when you compare them to how things were mixed and produced before that. So I'm just saying, we've been on this long road to shit for a long time. I'm okay with MP3s and streamings existing and sounding like they sound. And I'm okay with it in the same way that I'm okay with the fact that, like, AM radio existed at one point. Like, people wanted a cheap, easy way to consume audio, and that was the way to do it. And they were willing to sacrifice, you know, the fidelity of it just for the sake of having the ease of it. And that's, you know, that's a trade-off you got to make sometimes.
Like, I'm not willing to make that, Adam. I don't want to spend $40 for a WAV file.
Oh, I don't want to spend $40 for a WAV file either. But at the same point, if I'm in my office at work and I'm listening to some shitty music over the internet, but I'm listening to it through, you know, a crappy pair of headphones and I'm distracted by 10 things I don't really care that it's MP3 quality at that point. I still want the option to be able to go home and to put on a record with my speakers and stereo that I consider to be sounding good. And I want to be able to afford that still. Don't get me wrong. I don't want that to become prohibitive. But like, there's a time and place where I'm okay to sacrifice fidelity for convenience.
But I'm saying the option, your sit-at-home option, is going up in price exponentially, or will. Scott?
I don't know. Scott, well, I don't know about that.
The whole thing is like now, the idea of like selling higher quality music, what doesn't get talked about is that people are listening to it on shittier and shittier devices. Like, I would guess that much less people, families, whatever, are buying $1,500 clip speakers for their living room and stuff like that. You know, this idea that I'm getting a higher quality stream from Tidal, but I'm listening to it on my $40 Samsung phone with my $5 Walgreens earbuds, like I give a shit about that at all. It's kind of like, you know, buying the 180 gram double LP on 45, but then taking it home and playing it on your $35 Urban Outfitter turntable. You know, it's kind of like that. It's like, sure, it's lossless files, but most people are probably listening to it on their phone, you know, not bringing their laptop in through their home theater system into some, you know, some beautiful way. And then, honestly, though, I get this question a lot, not about streaming music, but fans ask me all the time about vinyl sound-wise and stuff like that. And I like my music to sound kind of shitty. Like, you know, when people are like, I love records, they sound better. I'm really the opposite. I'm kind of like, I love records, they sound a little bit shittier. I love it.
How about something like that's like really like, has a full sound, like a Frank Zappa record or a Black Sabbath record or a Melvins record? You want that to sound shitty?
It just kind of depends. Like, I do have a really expensive home stereo and a really expensive speakers, and I spent all this money on this shit in the 90s. It holds up. I've carried this stuff here from town to town, you know? So I do appreciate it. And I did finally invest in a really nice pair of computer speakers also that even just plug into my laptop and completely change the game on my listening to MP3s, you know? But just in general, I don't really think that consumer cares as much as it's being marketed to them, the sound quality.
I care.
You do. And well, yeah, exactly. I mean, that's not to say people don't. But I'm going to put my money on, Johnny G, that you're more the exception than the rule.
Oh, absolutely. I would say 95% of consumers don't care at all, probably.
I don't. Dude, you need to get yourself a Poyo. I mean, streaming-wise, I like my – I stream on YouTube. I don't use Spotify. I stream music on YouTube all the time. And, yes, it's very disappointing when it's a really old upload – when it's all like JPEG'd out and shitty MP3 symbols and stuff like that. But I'm finding that less and less, you know. The general consumer can upload a quality MP3 for me to stream off YouTube, and I don't need to get it from Tidal. But so back to Tidal, I think the main thing they fucked up was the very first thing that happened on Twitter was everyone's like, why would I pay more for something I don't even pay for anyways?
Well put.
It's going to be interesting to see what comes of this, because on the one hand, these are, you know, Jay-Z and them, they have the money to try to save face by, you know, subsidizing this thing if it doesn't turn out that it's going to work out for them. But on the other hand, Jay-Z's whole shtick is that he's a businessman. So is there not some point where he should, you know, as a responsible businessman, kind of see that, like, this is a fucked up brand that we have here and we should get out of it before we start pissing money away? Like, that's, you know, I'm curious.
That's the other thing. You're right. He's a good businessman. I don't think he's going to watch his money float away for very long.
Yeah. And I'm wondering, like,
quick. I wasn't kidding when we started and I said, if you're on the service, listen to Ghoul. I want to get one check out of these guys before they go under. I really don't think they're going to make it.
Yeah. So there you go. Also, when you're listening to Ghoul, You should listen to Radioactivity. The band has announced a new full length. It's coming out on Dirt Nap Records soon. This is the band that features Jeff Burke and Mark Ryan of the Marked Men out of Texas. The album that they have coming out is going to be called Silent Kill. It's out on June 30th on Dirt Nap, as I just said. If you want to check out the debut single from this thing, it's called Silent. You can find it on Punk News. Just search for Radioactivity. I was a huge fan of this band's first LP that came out, which was self-titled, I believe. John, was it self-titled?
Yes.
I didn't say it was self-titled.
I believe it was.
It was yellow. So anyways, it's a yellow cover. It's great. Anyways, if you like the Marked Men or the kind of stuff that Dirt Nap puts out, you'll love Radioactivity. So you should go check them out. They're on there. John, did you check this out? Are you into this kind of thing?
I did. I mean, I'm not a mega fan, but I dug this track, man. It's high energy. It's rocking. I guess it's more in the... It leans towards almost AM pop, to tell you the truth, sort of like Red Cross did in their mid-period. And it's cool, man. It's rocking. I dig it.
Yeah, I haven't checked it out. This is one of the links that was broken on mine, and I didn't. But I'm curious, because I like the Marked Men. They're like power pop that hardcore kids like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Chaos and, like, kill it in between, like, some Japanese noise bands. And everyone was, like, super happy. You know, it was like a – so I'm curious to see what they're doing next, because I kind of thought Marked Men could have done more. Like, I think they were an unfortunate disbandment, because they were starting to get – they could have done something bigger, like a bands we talked about. Like, they could have done a ceremony type thing in their genre, stayed a band for over a decade and changed some minds or changed some sounds. Who knows?
You'll be into this then, because I mean, if you liked the Marked Men at all, this is kind of like the next step for them for sure. So,
all right. Well, speaking of changing young minds with some new sounds, let's wrap up this bad boy. Scotty, hit us with a track from the Tank Crimes discography. Who are we playing next? Who should the kids check out?
Well, I gotta go Ghoul, man. It's my flagship band, and they are heading out on the Weapons of Mosh Destruction tour with Phobia from Orange County, California, and Necrofilth from Ohio on Hell's Headbangers Records. That tour starts in Denver May 15th, runs to the East Coast, hits Maryland Death Fest, goes back down, comes across the South, 5 shows in Texas, 5 shows on California, back coming around to Oakland. So this song's called Spill Your Guts. It's by Ghoul. It's off the Cannabis Corp split.
And that was Spill Your Guts by Ghoul, out on Tank Crimes Records, hitting up Maryland Death Fest and a whole bunch of other shows across the USA. And, of course, Triptychon will also be at Maryland Death Fest. And I might drive down there to see Ghoul and to see Triptychon.
Ghoul has the best time slot. I'm so thrilled. They play Friday night and have no competing bands. Like, one band, like, has a crossover for, like, 5 minutes. But they play after – they play indoors – after the main stage outdoors is done, and it's like early, it's on the Friday night, so people aren't like going to be too wasted yet. Like, they got such a great slot.
That whole crew is going to love that that band. I think it's going
to
be
Cool Does Great at Maryland Death Fest. Like, I think they might be the band that's played the most. Like, this is their fifth, I think, time at Maryland Death Fest.
Well, they have. Well, Scotty, as always, thanks for being on the podcast. You always bring interesting insight from the punk and metal world, as well as the 420 friendly land of Oakland, or Oaksterdam, if you will.
Yeah, that's us.
And well, Adam White, as always, keeping it down, running this podcast like a tight ship, bringing in the gold as always.
John, I won't leave you again.
I hope not, Adam. I mean, seriously, Adam, I need you on the podcast. You are my foil. You are the cool, calm, collected, thoughtful persona, and I'm just the guy that yells about Guar. As always, you can reach us at podcast@punknews.org. Scotty, thanks again. It is a pleasure to have you on.
Thanks, John. Thanks, Adam.
And you can check out Tank Crimes at tankcrimes.com, right, Scotty?
Tank Crimes. Correct.
All right, and we'll see you next week.